Good evening, everybody. It's just about 11 o'clock now in the p.m. on Monday, the 28th of April. And my name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I'll be back with you in just a minute. evening to y'all. Good morning to you. Good day. Whoever you might be, wherever you might be, as you listen to this radio program, you are listening to Radio Orbit, and welcome to it on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. It's good to be here with y'all tonight. Got an action-packed show for you, and we're going to get things going right away here after a quick thank you to Corey, as always. New Wave Radio Theater, 1 hour before this program every Monday, 10 p.m. Corey brings you wonderful theater on the radio. New Wave Radio Theater with Corey every Monday. Check it out just before this program. Kelvin and Jason, sometimes, but tonight I think Eric was on the air again. I missed most of the program, but jazz plus blues equals free energy, I guess. Tech Radio at 6 p.m. They keep us up on the wild world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starting things off. Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Good music, good talk, good news. Another nice Monday night, but darn cold again. Might even freeze in some areas tonight. So prayers and warm thoughts for all the gardens out there. At any rate, it is a pleasure to be here with you all tonight on Radio Orbit, the 28th of April. You're listening to it on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And it's your imagination station, all right? About last week, what else can I say? Kent Stedman. I simply love the man, and I will miss him a whole hell of a lot. There's a whole slew of interviews with Kent in the archives, and all I can say is that I hope you'll listen to them, and I hope you'll share them with other people if you think they weren't sharing. Aho, Kent Modal Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. I was in Seattle for the last few days, just got back this morning, as a matter of fact, and we had a wonderful celebration for the life of this amazing man, his family, his friends, his brothers, his children, his wonderful wife, his wonderful former wife, and a whole bunch of friends from all over the place. Wonderful music throughout the weekend, and just a celebration of this amazing person's life. So, once again, to my best friend, Kent Modal Stedman, I love you, and thank you for everything that you gave to us, and we're going to carry the torch, all right? Don't you worry, my grandfather. All right, by the way, if you missed last week's show or any other past shows, you can always hear them after the act. They're all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, H-A-G-A-N. Just click on over to the program archives. Take a look around in there. Maybe you'll find something you like. If you do, share it with others if you get the notion, all right? Okay, tonight we will have Bill Murphy, the chairman of GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, during the first hour, just in a few minutes here. And then Sterling Allen, the founder of Pure Energy Systems, will have a couple hours with Sterling for the duration of the program. So, yeah, tonight, precious metals, economics, and free energy. All that along with the music of Blue Rodeo, a favorite old band of mine from Canada. We started things off with a song called Save Myself. We'll do one more right now and come back with Bill Murphy from GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. All right, it is Mike Hagan. You're listening to it. Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This one is called What You Want.
Woke up from another dream, the clouds in my head. Sat down by the window, watched the sunrise burning red. Guess I'm doing all right now, but it's too much time to kill.
Rodeo on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Radio Orbit. My name is Mike Hagan. About 14 minutes after the hour of 11 p.m., it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. Our first guest on the program this evening is known by the name Bill Murphy. He is the chairman and director of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. He has worked for various Wall Street brokerage firms and specialized in commodity futures during that part of his career, and eventually started his own brokerage in New York City. He now operates an internet site for the financial commentary, lemetropolecafe.com. I've been observing and paying attention to what Bill Murphy has been doing and saying for a number of years, and it is a pleasure to welcome him to the program. Bill Murphy, welcome to Radio Orbit.
Great to be here, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, Bill, for the people who are not familiar, let's do a quick little bit of background of you and GATA and who you are and why you began the Gold Antitrust Action Committee to begin with, and how those two things sort of come together.
Well, I've been in the commodities business, as you said, for many years, and one thing led to another, and he started to realize the Internet was going to go someplace and started a website that talked mostly about the gold market, the Metropole Cafe. And then soon after starting, I realized after the big hedge fund, long-term capital management, blew up, we heard they were short all this gold. As a trader, I realized the price should have taken off, and I saw Goldman Sachs and the big banks coming in and stopping it above 300 just when it should have taken off time and time again. I heard some other things. I complained. One of my new subscribers said he was tired of hearing about me complaining. He said he was a newspaper editor. Said if I put up $500, I put up $500, he put up $500, and we'd do something about it, because if I was correct, then it was a violation of antitrust laws. And that's how it all got started, January 1999.
Yeah, and my compliments on Le Metropole. It's an amazing resource.
Thank you.
Okay, so details now. For people who aren't familiar with the metals markets or precious metals and commodities, what's going on? Or what do you think is going on?
Well, we've had 9 years' worth of evidence and can't get anyone to debate it. So, And by the way, what we're talking about is on the public record. I mean, the gold market's being manipulated by the United States government and various agents of the banks like J.P. Morgan, which helped just to bail out Bear Stearns for the Fed,
right.
Goldman Sachs.
Another complete con, that was.
Another con. And, and other banks like the Bank of England and other allied people around the world, center banks, that have been suppressing the price of gold for about a decade. It was initially got set in motion by Robert Rubin. It was the linchpin of his strong dollar policy. I mean, when anyone says, well, what was the strong dollar policy?
Rubin was treasurer?
He was treasurer. He's Clinton's treasurer, yes. Mm-hmm. And he was a former... Most people don't know this. He at Goldman Sachs, before he went to the Treasury and before he became the top dog there in London, he was the head, he was the head of the gold trading department.
Go figure.
So he knew all about gold leasing, gold lending, and so on. So it started with him, and then it kept going because it was the money and power behind it, and the suppression of the gold price was done to foster again a stronger dollar, lower interest rates than they would have been, money coming into the stock market. And so on. And one thing led to another. And since then, the central banks have gone through half the gold that people think they have, and they're running out. And that's why the gold price has gone from 250 to 1,030.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you could clarify a little bit about the methodology that's actually used to suppress the price of gold. And also, I guess, a question about other metals. I mean, is silver included in this game?
Well, it's not just the metals. I mean... There's so much to get into. I mean, the working group on financial markets has got a lot of attention recently, which is...
The so-called plunge protection team?
The plunge protection team, and that's the reason the stock market never breaks down, even though the news is terrible. But they've ever since 9/11, they've been very aggressive in supporting the stock market. And I think it started on national security issues, but then it got into... they're like heroin addicts. It started off as a recreational thing, and now it's a necessity. So
yeah, it's amazing. You read the articles that come out day after day after day, and they are just nothing but absolute horrific news. And the markets either stay relatively level or go, you know, notch up just a hair.
Well, they just got it high enough so the Dow Transports and Dow Jones broke a new high ground, and a lot of highly acclaimed technical theorists are calling a Dow theory breakout and so on. This is
what these guys
wanted to do. And by the way, it's not just a working group on financial markets. There's another group called the Counterparty Risk Management Group. There's the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and then there was what I call the gold cartel. And they're all in on this together in terms of, quote, and this is in the copy in the Counterparty Risk Management Group, to create order. So, and financial stability in the markets. And if we're going to do that, I mean, you always want an emergency, but it's out of control for the benefit of the incumbent politicians and the big banks and the big money, and it's setting up the little guy like they just did in the real estate market. The same thing's coming in the stock market, and they'll all have enough money to enjoy their lives, but the little guy won't know what hit him because they've taken all the danger signals away, and that goes back to the suppression of the gold price. If the gold price were right now, it should be at least 2,000 and probably a little more. What would everyone be talking about? The terrible inflation, the crisis, the problems. All of it's bad for what I call Planet Wall Street, which is an appropriate name for your radio coverage here. And that's they don't want it to go up. And plus, they're all shorted in this leasing operation. He asked me earlier how they did it.
Yeah.
The central banks have gold that's just sitting there. And I mean, if you go back to Robert Rubin, who was head of the gold leasing operations, especially years ago when interest rates were 7, 8, 9%, 10, 12%.
Sure.
So they borrow gold from the central bank for a percent and a quarter. They take the physical gold, they sell it in the marketplace, which adds supply, suppresses the price, and they take it and they can invest it in the old days at 8, 9, 10, 12%. Or they can use it to fund their own operations and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it also complements what the United States government wants. So it's got a win-win situation for everybody. Now, that was true as long as the price of gold stayed steady or went down, because if you borrow it, you're supposed to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's complicated, but this gold's never going to get paid back. If people think there's 30,000 tons of gold in the central banks, there's less than 15. And I could go on and on and on.
So this is part of a big part of it, is that there's actually gold that's being moved about on paper that doesn't...
It's actually being sold. It's physical gold being sold. Now, they use what they call the derivatives markets, which are futures and options for short-term purposes to help their technical trading and do certain things to bomb the market at certain times.
Right,
but
right.
After a period of months, they have to have the physical gold to meet the demand, because the demand is far greater than mine and scrap supply.
Okay, so physical gold is being sold, but essentially it's being sold up.
You know, think of it as Goldman Sachs going to the Bank of England, borrowing 50 tons of gold and selling it into the market. So when you sell all that extra gold, what's the price to? It goes down because there's excess supply.
Yeah, but they're just borrowing the gold.
That's correct. And at some point, they're supposed to pay it back. Now, we don't think this gold will ever be paid back, and there's some kind of...
So that's the rub.
The rub is it can't, because the deficit's about 1,000 to 1,300, 1,400 tons a year. Again, that's demand over mine and scrap supply.
Mm-hmm.
They borrow this gold. A deficit like that, they just can't do it. The price would double in a matter of days, weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's created this situation that is, because the demand is growing for all the reasons about inflation and the dollar stinking up the place and the crisis we have in the United States and the terrible deficits we have here and so on. So demand for gold, people see what's happening. They want more of it.
Right.
But the central banks are running on, there's certain central banks that will not sell whatever they have. So it's not as though they have 15 or 14,000 tons left. What's really available, it might be 2 or 3 or 4. That's why all of a sudden now they're begging the IMF to sell their gold, which they haven't done before, but that's been a big flap, and that goes back and forth, and that's a whole other issue. So it's, and by the way, for your listeners, to learn about the gold market is harder than obtaining secrets on a nuclear bomb. That's how important the subject is to the people in charge of the U.S. government.
Remarkable.
Now, and also, we have sued, we have asked the Fed and Treasury on their FOIA request for just the truth. As an American, all we want is the truth.
Yeah.
They said they've done nothing with their gold since the Eisenhower administration. Nothing. Now, the Treasury hasn't responded in 6 months, and we just got, and I haven't read it yet, it's being FedEx now, 914 pages about gold swaps, of which they supposedly did nothing with, and they redacted 350 pages, and they won't send us 137 other pages.
about something esoteric as gold slumps, which they've never done anything with? I just cannot be.
Right.
So it's exciting.
It is amazing.
Because we're getting closer and closer to nailing these guys, because eventually it's going to, in my opinion, it's one of the major causes of this real estate fiasco the excesses that started. It all started with the rigging of the gold price. So while most Americans may not care about gold, there's going to come a time when they're going to care a lot about it.
Well, I think it's pretty remarkable that the price of gold is $1,000 an ounce plus or minus already right now. And even with the efforts that have been made, the extensive efforts that have been made to hold the price down. Are they trying to manage it, to let it go up softly?
They're just trying to manage it so there doesn't create any excitement. And it gets even more complicated what they're doing in the gold shares and so on. But, it's very simple by the way, again, what we're talking about, the Bank for International Settlements has admitted to, Citibank has even talked about it, the Australian Central Bank. A lot of things are on the record. Alan Greenspan said central banks shall lease gold in increasing quantity should the price rise, and that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But the price is going to 3,000 to 5,000 in the way I see it, and I've been saying that for years.
Mm-hmm.
But the price of platinum is like $2,100, $2,000 an ounce. Gold and platinum used to trade the same for years. Gold and oil used to trade at a 15-to-1 price relationship at $120 oil.
Right.
That's $1,800 gold,
right,
or double
right.
what it is today.
Right.
If gold had kept pace with inflation, it would be $2,300 an ounce.
Hmm.
It's less than $900 after what they just did to it. So that's how much they suppressed the price.
Okay, so there was a conference recently, a week or so ago, held in Washington, I guess, right?
Yes, we were following up on our Freedom of Information request. We had nearly 200 people in Arlington, Virginia, right outside of Washington. We call it the belly of the beast, and had, you know, just fabulous speakers from Mexico and South Africa and England, and we had people from 18 countries in Uruguay, India, I mean, New Zealand, Panama, Chile. It was very exciting. It was a great conference, and to shine some light on this, what eventually people realize is it's a very bad situation, because these people might think that they're doing the right thing, but it's gone amok, and it's everything's starting to blow up because of what they started 10 years ago. I go back to the heroin addict again thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now their fixes aren't working, and they're going into withdrawals, and they're trying anything they can think of, and they're desperate, just like an addict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the parallels between what's happening in the markets and addictive behavior is just remarkable, actually.
What's remarkable, again, how the stock market doesn't do anything. And I listen to the CNBC crowd and the Planet Wall Street crowd. They all saying how great the market acts and all the bad news factored in. Heck with that. It's not factored in. It's not like the news is bad, the market tanks, everything's terrible, and the market corrects, gets everybody washed out, and then it goes up. That's a normal market thing.
Right.
Right now, all the news each week is worse than anybody has expected,
yeah.
And yet the stock market is just breaking out to the upside. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane, and it's unsustainable, assuming that the market isn't completely rigged. I mean, I've had intimations, you know, in the last 6 months that, you know, like I wake up in the morning and in a little dream state, I see a guy from Goldman and a guy from J.P. Morgan having a cocktail at about 9 a.m. and saying, hey, what should we finish the market at today? And then they say, okay, 12850.66, and then they punch it in their computer, and no matter what happens during the day, that's what the market ends up at that night.
Well, your dreams are prescient, because there's been many times since the beginning of the year, and last year it's been going on for a long time, but they pull what they call the Hail Mary play. At 3 o'clock or afterwards, the Dow can be down 150 points or something like that. Within the last hour, it'll rally 200 points on no news.
On nothing, yeah.
Nothing, and nothing comes out that would account for it. And everyone just said, oh, the market was sold out. They just make up things. My expression is, price action makes market commentary. And they'll say anything to rationalize why it did this. Nobody will go to where we are and get to the truth of what's so obvious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, the addictive thing, it's just denial, you know. And, of course, there are people whose lives and businesses and you know, their own income and all that are, I mean, my God, the CNBC crowd, you know, I mean, come on.
Well, CNBC, all the Wall Street crowd, all
right,
their bonuses,
right,
all their business. Now, everyone, and honestly, the American public, and I know many hedge fund people that are aware of this, well, they'll all root them on because it's all their businesses. Now, everything's copacetic until you get another Bear Stearns, or maybe we get 25 at once and they can't bail it out.
Right.
And not only is a real estate go down another 20 or 30%, which, by the way, people much smarter than me are saying it's almost as bad as the Depression now. It's going to get worse than the Depression by the time it's done. Then the market goes, all the people's money are gone, and everyone's going to start and clamor and say, how could this have happened?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to raise my hand.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is read 9 years of what we put together, and it's all there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, the Federal Reserve, please talk a little bit, and if you want, just a little historical stuff, too, so people who aren't really familiar with the Fed might know just a little bit about the way that gang operates. But the Federal Reserve, how do they play into this whole thing?
Well, when you get into the details of this whole thing, it's extremely complicated. My specialty is gold, but
mm-hmm.
but you know, the Fed and the Treasury are very closely linked, even in the gold market. Ownership, who stores it, the whole thing, who's exempt, and they have certain certificates they draw against it. It's very complicated. All, I think most important for your readers to understand is that the Fed is the one that is printing the money, and the Treasury is the one that's, you know, honchoing a lot of the plans and what needs to be done with the dollar and with the gold and with the stock market. I mean, that's what the Exchange Stabilization Fund is all about, for example. So they work very closely together, and that's what he said. They met recently, this working group on financial markets. They met with the head of the SEC and the head of the Security Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, which are bureaucratic organizations. Why do you need, and Paulson, the mm-hmm. treasurer, mm-hmm. said that they would do whatever it takes to calm the markets, to stabilize the markets, and then all these strange things happen. Gold collapses, and the stock market starts taking off, and a whole bunch of other things,
right.
and a whole bunch of money starts flowing into the marketplace. Why do you need two bureaucrats to make policy about the market?
Hmm.
They're supposed to be just regulating,
right.
to make sure that everything's going fine. But from my standpoint, they get together. Hey, look, we're going to have to get the stock market up, so we don't want to hear anything about manipulating the plunge protection team moving the stock market up. And we're taking the gold down, so we don't want to hear anything about a gold price suppression. So if you get any complaints, you know, deep six them.
Right.
Or if you see people doing it, we don't want any inquiries, just let them go.
Now, when you mention the Fed, they print the money. These days, it's essentially a stroke of keys, right? I mean, everything's digital and everything's computer.
Well, yeah, I mean, or I mean, again, if this is not my field, but it's just whether it's repo operations or whatever it is, they just take the money and they put the money in the market, or they give it to their dealers or their, you know, the banks in the Federal Reserve System, and they get the money employed to, you know, to get the economy revved up, and that's where, of course, that's where you get involved in inflation and so on. That
mm-hmm.
You know, well, why not just do this all the time? And like they're going to start to give everybody $600. Why not make it $1,500?
Right, right.
It's gotten to the point where nothing we corrections are not allowed, and that's not what American free market capitalism is all about.
Right.
It's a healthy thing to correct excesses, but what they did was they cut that out, and that's what the gold price suppression scheme started. They cut out, because again, when gold goes up, everyone thinks there's something wrong. But it's like a thermometer. Well, you want a thermometer to tell you if you're sick. If you take away and don't let the thermometer work, the patient can die
mm-hmm.
because he's not taking the proper treatment to get better. And that's what's happened here. It's one of the best analogies I can make to try to explain what's happening here to your listeners.
All right. Okay, question from a listener, and a good one because it was on my list. People want to know, assuming they can protect themselves and their investments with gold, what are maybe some good strategies to buy gold, for example? And,
well,
and the mining stocks, I guess I'm interested in how they're performing these days.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we've been, you know, we can go back. We, well, first of all, we had a conference in We've had one conference in Durban, South Africa. It was primetime television. Oh, by the way, we're not allowed. God is not allowed to be mentioned in the United States.
God is not allowed.
No,
got it.
I was on CNBC 9 years ago, and as soon as they heard what I had to say, we've been blackballed ever since.
That's remarkable.
Even though we've been righter on the gold market than anybody in the world, mm-hmm. We had a conference in Durban, South Africa, May 10th, 2001. It was very popular. Five countries came, South African Broadcasting Television. Big deal. Not mentioned here. We had a conference August 2005 way up in Dawson City, Yukon, where the first gold rush was. I mean, it took a day to get there and back in the middle of nowhere. We had President Putin's top economic advisor, Andrei Baikov, came. Said it was the finest conference he'd ever been to.
Hmm.
Gold was 436 at the time. It had been quiet. It exploded 2 days later. Went straight to 730 before Washington ordered it down, which they just did again about a month ago after it broke 1,000.
Well,
and the point is that they took our information, and we think the Russians took it. It could have been another coincidence, and started buying up the market. It just took off. But the point is that gold, it's a little under 900 now. I've been saying for years it's going to 3,000 to 5,000, so people can buy physical bullion, physical gold at various dealers. There's a certain small premium over the spot price, and tuck it away. And in terms of the shares, it's a complete dichotomy. You've had not so much the major shares, the bigger companies, but many of the junior companies that are really good ones and exploration companies that need to find this stuff have been slaughtered since past August.
Mm-hmm.
And even though gold and silver went up, they went down. So they are the steals of the century, at least if you get four or five, six good junior companies, exploration companies, and get a basket of them. And I think they can go up 10 times from here easy.
Okay. And you like the idea of people taking physical possession of their...
Physical possession, also buying these companies that have been beat up. And there's a lot of good people out there that know what they're talking about. And you want to, everyone should do their homework and check out a basket of five, six, seven of them. And but boy, they're like, I don't know, six or seven times below where they should be in a normal market. Why? It's like a market phenomenon. That's totally shocked me. But I look at it like a Warren Buffett would. If you know what's coming and why, and we've been right all this time, you know this will correct and go just as much overshoot on the upside as it has on the downside.
Right. All right, a little bit more about what colleagues of yours around the world are saying in other countries. How concerned are they, and why would financial people in other countries be concerned about what's happening over here? And I guess England is a big part of this as well, but maybe you could talk a little bit about the relationship between ourselves and these other nations.
Well, I mean, in terms of gold, that's a pretty big subject there. I can say, in terms of gold, it was interesting because Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, was the guy who sold England's gold at $275 an ounce to help the price suppression scheme and gain favor with politically. And, of course, now he's he heads up England. He just met, I think it was last week, right before a conference with Ben Bernanke, who heads up our Fed. So it was appropriate that England and the United States would get together because they were the prime people in rigging the gold price. So, but, you know, England is very closely involved with the U.S. on this one. In terms of other countries, I think they really just got talked into it mostly. I mean, some of them just got suckered or became sheeples and followed it because it made no sense. Because anybody who sold gold 3 and 4 years ago, it's the dumbest thing they could have done. And the sad part, it's going to the Indians, the Russians, the Chinese, the Arabs. And as the dollar, completely loses face and value, there's certain people that won't even take dollars anymore. And that's almost unimaginable to all of us 5 and 10 years ago, years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The balance of power is shifting, and the importance of commodities now is becoming important. There's food shortages. The base metals have been very firm. Gold and silver are actually two of the cheapest things around.
Yeah, it's amazing. And when you mention the issues that are showing themselves now in grain and rice and...
Well, if we ever have drought this year. I used to trade soybeans quite a bit in, Midwestern area. And there hasn't been there's been some tough times and some crop losses, but there hasn't been an old-fashioned drought in the Midwest in over 20 years. It used to happen every 3 years. They used to have some serious problems. So if that ever happens now with where the prices of soybeans and corn are and wheat. Boy, I mean, it can be almost unimaginable what these prices could do. Now, that's the weather, and nobody can predict that. I'm certainly not, but it's overdue, and it's one's coming soon.
Okay. All right. What's on the docket for you guys? What's the plan to move forward, and what should people know, and what might they do to help?
Well, they can check us out by going to www.gata.org, G-A-T-A.org, and they can see what our ad was all about. We put a $264,000 full-page color ad in the Wall Street Journal and didn't get one press inquiry. Yeah, you would think that people want to know, well, who are those guys? $264,000, and it was a fabulous ad. Your listeners can go check it out.
Well, I gotta jump in because I always take the opportunity when I can, because see, I'm in Columbia, Missouri, and the one of the, if not the foremost journalism schools in the country is about 500 yards from my studio right now.
Sure.
And I always challenge these so-called journalists, right, to cover these types of stories, and I'll do it again. So for all of you vaunted journalism students and wonderful reporters at the Missourian and at the university here, and of course at the Columbia Tribune as well, how about a little story on GATA and the Gold Antitrust Action Committee and what the hell is going on with commodities and suppression of prices? I think it's worthy of your investigation, and I know a guy that you might talk to about it.
Well, I'd be surprised, because I've been in the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Barron's, Fortune, Forbes, CNN, CNBC, Fox News, Washington Times, and I could go on and on. And you talk to them, and whether they're going to do something or not, when it gets to the others, it's deep six.
Right.
Not even mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling even a story.
Yeah, it's not back page even, yeah.
Not even mentioned. And we're talking about even though, again, we've been righter on the gold market than anybody, and that's all, it's on the record stuff. I mean, anybody can check this out. And yet, when it comes to taking on the richest and most powerful people in the world, we do not have a free press. Anybody in America that thinks we have a free press has no idea what they're talking about. We have a bought press.
Yep, you're damn
and
right.
And evidence of that is why we can't get anyone even to tell our story. We can't get, as I said earlier, we can't get anyone to debate us.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had similar experiences with other types of projects, and I know that you're telling the truth, because I've actually had it happen to me myself. The silence is absolutely remarkable with certain particular topics. So anyway, I got one more question for you before we say goodbye, but what do you think about Ron Paul? Because I think he still has a chance, believe it or not.
You know, he's a good man. I met Ron Paul. One of his staffers, former staffers, was at our conference outside of Washington, and
yeah, I figured he had somebody there.
Yeah, and he makes too much sense. I mean, I wish Americans were a little deeper instead of, not to be real corny, but, you know, worrying about what Britney Spears is wearing and stuff like this. I mean, if they took a little time to not just listen to what the sound bites are with some of these people and what really could affect them, it would make a difference, but they won't, and part of the media is the problem there. I mean, they didn't give Ron Paul the time of day.
My gosh,
time.
It's amazing.
So,
talk about blackball, you know.
How can the average American do it? I mean, I'm talking to myself here, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
When the media will cut him all out of debates and things like that, even though he was an internet phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, remarkable.
He's the most honorable man out there, that's for sure, in terms of his beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, anything you want to finish up with, you're welcome to, but I thank you for your time, and GATA.org, I encourage all my listeners to get out there and take a look and share that with other people, because it's absolutely critical to what's happening in, essentially in the entire global economy right now.
Mike, all I'd like to end up saying, have your people do their homework, check some out of the stuff we're saying, and develop a little curiosity into what this is all about, because once you go where we go, once you land on planet God, you don't find anything to look at the world in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep looking. We're just after the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine, go back to that. We're only asking the Fed and the Treasury for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't give it to us. What kind of country are we coming to?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm about the same thing as you are. All I want is the truth, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, Bill. It's been a pleasure. Take care of yourself, all right?
Enjoy it, Mike. Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Bye. All right, everybody. Bill Murphy, GATA.org, GATA GoldAntitrust.org, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Learn about what's happening with precious metals. Learn about what's happening with the Federal Reserve. Learn about how the economy of this country and this world actually works, and the fact that it's all built on lies and manipulation and deception and fishy formulas run by who knows who. And maybe we can sneak out of the mess that we're in. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is Blue Rodeo. The song is called Girl in Green, as in Federal Reserve notes.
Sure.
Green. That's Blue Rodeo. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. It's about 11:51 in the Central Time Zone now on the 28th of April, 2008. Fast approaching the 29th in just a couple of minutes here. Hello to everybody listening to us this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves or over the internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we broadcast this program from the beautiful studios here at KOPN in lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. Stream the show live as well on the web, kopn.org. Just manage your mouse over to the Listen Live button, and you'll get a 64K stream that you can pick up anywhere on the planet, as long as you've got a reasonably fast internet connection. All right, thanks to everybody who makes that happen, live on the radio, live on the net, and as well to the people that help me out, Larry Noriger, of course, Chaos always helping out, and all those other people that get involved and participate and share in the program here. I appreciate it all. Thanks to all of you, okay? Artwork, music, poetry, all that stuff, send it to us and send it to me. I'd love to share it with other people. If you're an artist of any variety, feel free to get in touch with me, and I'd love to help you find a way to share your art with other people, okay? We'll do our best to find a place for it on the website or make it available for other people to see if they're interested in checking it out, okay? Take a look at what we're doing over there if you like. You'll have to navigate over to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You'll have access to everything we're doing over there, and please share your thoughts with us, okay? There's a forum and a live chat that's up and active right now, as a matter of fact. Hello to everybody over there in the chat room. And, well, it's just a great opportunity to talk and converse and debate and share ideas and information and humor and anything else you might have in mind with other people. And I encourage all my guests as well as listeners to join us over there in the chat and the forum. And I do my best to get in there as well whenever I can. So, all right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. Send email to me. Send email to the guests that appear on the program, the musicians that appear on the program. Everybody likes to hear from you and, you know, are interested in your comments and thoughts. So feel free to do that. You can do it via email. You can always get a hold of me over the website, MikeHagan.com. And if we decide to take some phone calls during the program, later on perhaps, I'm not sure, we'll see, but the number is 573-443-8255, okay? Very quickly here, a little bit about some upcoming guests, and then we'll play another piece of music, and at the top of the hour we'll have Sterling Allen. Sterling Allen is an expert in, well, in a general sense, about alternative energy. He has a number of different websites, and is essentially a clearinghouse for all things interesting and energy-related. So we'll talk with Sterling Allen in just a few minutes here about alternative energy tonight and all kinds of different ways to look at this particular topic, okay? So that'll be in just a few minutes. Next week is the 5th of May. We'll have Richard Allen Miller live here in the studio. Richard Allen Miller will be visiting from his home in Oregon, and we'll be here in Columbia for a day or two. So we'll have Rick Miller here in the studio with me next Monday, and I'm sure he'll be with me earlier in the evening down at the Fugue. We can probably hook up with anybody who'd like to show up down there and chat just sort of casually. We have a friend named Nick who's going to be in town as well with Rick and Nick, as it were. And anybody else who's interested in getting to know these guys on a personal basis, you're welcome to come down to the Fugue next week, the Blue Fugue, that is, down there on 9th Street around Locust, I guess, in between Cherry and Locust. And we'll all be down there just sort of chatting and having a beer before we come down here to do the program, okay? So, and it's going to be an interesting one for sure. It always is with Richard Allen Miller, but the one next week I think will be particularly interesting because he's actually going to be here with us in the studio, and he's a wild man. So I look forward to it, and I'm hoping that you all can join us for the program next week, okay? The 12th of May, I don't have on my list here, but I know I've got someone scheduled for it. I just can't remember who. The 19th of May is Rick Simpson, and he has an amazing story about cannabis and hemp oil from up there in Canada. We'll talk to Rick Simpson on the program on the 19th of May. We have Dr. Halton Arp. People who are interested in astrophysics will be very I think, happy to hear about this particular program. Halton Arp, he's an older man now, probably in his mid-80s, but an absolute astonishing astrophysicist and a maverick among them. And so we'll talk with him about all kinds of different things cosmic in a few weeks, Dr. Halton Arp. Dr. Rustam Roy, of course, the amazing physicist who's been doing incredible work in the fields of structured water, including this this burning of salt water, which is something we'll have to ask Sterling Allen about. He published a paper just a few weeks ago in March with John Canzius, the guy from Florida who was trying to make a cancer machine or something like that, a cure for cancer using RF, which was actually featured on 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago. He also had discovered this very interesting property of salt water when you run an RF wave through it. So anyway, Dr. Rustam Roy also doing very interesting work in the field of nanoparticular silver, and you all know that I'm very interested in that that particular line of work. So anyway, Dr. Rustam Roy, we are going to do a recorded interview. We were supposed to do it on Friday, but because I had to go to Seattle for Kent's remembrance and for his celebration, I was unable to do the interview when I was supposed to. So Dr. Roy and I are going to reschedule, and we'll have that to air for you in just a few weeks, hopefully, okay? Anyway, a whole lot of other great stuff coming, and I look forward to the program throughout the spring here and into the summer, and we'll do it up, okay? Space weather, we will have to forego tonight. If you're interested, just go on the web and check it out yourself. Space weather in a Google search or any other search engine will probably give you a lot of interesting stuff to take a look at, okay? The news, take a look at my forum if you want to see, usually some breaking news. And if anything interesting happening, it usually shows up on there pretty quickly. And quick announcements, Kurt Gödel, the amazing mathematician, a birthday today, the 28th of April, 1906. Kurt Gödel, known, of course, for Gödel's incompleteness theorems, changed the face of mathematics and physics and sciences in general, although not really recognized as such. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, a birthday on the 1st of May, Beltane, 1881. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit priest, mystic visionary, one of my favorite people, and certainly sort of a contemporary of ours, I think died in around 1960 or so. And Mary Harris Jones, a birthday on the same day, different year, but on May 1st, 1830. Mary Harris Jones, of course, Mother Jones, a wonderful woman who was interested in helping people for the most part. So check any of them out, and you'll probably learn something pretty cool, okay? It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're going to play one more quick one here. I'll get my act together, and we'll come back with Sterling Allen, talk about alternative energy for the next 2 hours. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is Blue Rodeo.
I was riding on this train.
Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, everybody. It is me, Mike Hagan, on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just a couple of minutes after midnight now, on the 29th of April, 2008. Our guest for the rest of the program tonight is Sterling Allen. He's the CEO and the founder of the PES Network, Incorporated, and the New Energy Congress. Sterling is the primary driving force behind FreeEnergyNews.com, PureEnergySystems.com, and a number of other internet projects relating to alternative energy concepts. His passion is to see clean, affordable, reliable, safe, and practical energy solutions proceed from research and development into market penetration. He's made the term free energy more acceptable by relating it to the solar, wind, and geothermal areas and other well-understood technologies while also making the more exotic approaches not seem so crazy. His websites offer an extremely comprehensive look at energy systems of all types, and he's with us tonight to talk about as much of it as we can. So, that said, let's welcome Sterling Allen to Radio Orbit. Hello, Sterling. Thanks for being here tonight.
Mike, thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you here. Okay, let's get going first, if you would, with a little bit of a background story, some framework for the listeners about yourself and why they might consider listening to some of the things you have to say about alternative energy and how you got involved in it to begin with, perhaps.
Sure. My background is quite unusual. I came up through, started out fairly normal, going to graduate school and in the biological sciences, and started getting involved in the religious political arena. Felt like we were in a very precarious place in the planet. And actually kind of dropped out of the academic world and started really hitting it hard to get people prepared for the end of the world, so to speak. That was about a decade and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I spent almost 10 years in that mindset of hunkering down for the end of the world as we know it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And in that mode, I saw a lot of things, a lot of documentation about what's wrong with the government, with medicine, with basically the powers that be and the conniving that goes on to foist things on the public that the public is really not in the best interest of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And good things come along and they get sequestered, they get bought out, they get suppressed, people get killed, etc. And it's really unfortunate. So I was kind of in this mindset of, you know, at some point everything's, the bottom's going to fall out of our society and we're going to be living in bomb shelters for a while, and let's get ready for the world that's coming after that I was involved in an organization called, where we basically were pulling together a constitution for the world that would preserve the freedom for all mankind.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, when the U.S. hits the wall, so to speak, and is ready for some answers, let's have some answers for them and for the rest of the planet. If, you know, here's the standard of liberty that we can repair to and kind of turn things around and get started off in the right direction now that we've had meltdown.
Right, okay.
You know, once this society that is addicted to oil, addicted to other things, comes to its senses and is ready to do things right, let's have some answers for them. In the last 5 years, though, I've changed my direction. I've been focusing, rather than on the problems, I'm focusing on the solutions, and in particular, I'm focusing on clean energy. You know, so much in our society today, it hinges on energy. And unfortunately, a lot of that energy comes from polluting sources, which is basically pooping in our own nest. We're destroying the planet
mm-hmm.
because of our overuse of these resources. And they, you know, there's a lot of great documentaries out there. You know, we've got The 11th Hour that I watched last night. Outstanding job of presenting, you know, how what we've done to the planet and the fact that we can turn things around. It's a late hour. You know, we've got, it's like 1 minute before midnight in the our cosmic clock here on the planet before things get too late. But we can turn things around. It's both a very dangerous and a very opportunistic time to make a huge difference for our posterity and to turn a good corner. And so about 5 years ago, I was presented with some technology. You know, I had some religious political types of websites giving polemical commentary about what's going on, conspiracy, 911, and all that kind of stuff. And and somebody, you know, was approaching this concept of free energy, and I said, I don't have anything about that on my website. So I started a section on free energy.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately, I was contacted by an inventor down in Johannesburg. His name is Mike Brady, and he had a technology called Perandev, which...
Russian guy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that a little bit.
He's now in Germany, but he, at the time, was in South Africa, and he sent me a link to his website, and I immediately wrote back, and we started a friendly correspondence, and I almost immediately set up a schedule for him to come to the United States and to showcase his magnet motor. This is an all-magnet motor that is spinning on nothing but the power of magnets, no electrical input whatsoever. You have these magnets repelling magnets, and they're spinning this shaft, which can then turn a generator, which generates electricity for free, except, of course, the device isn't free, but, you know, you're getting energy like in solar. You know, you're tapping solar energy is free energy. The devices are not free.
Yeah, you have to build a device still. Yeah.
Right. His device differs from solar, and in as much as it's 24/7, it's always available. You can scale it up, scale it down to what you need, and would actually apparently be cheaper than what you pay for solar. So it seemed like a really exciting technology. And we actually ended up, there was a couple times when he was going to fly over here. The ticket got canceled. I confirmed that he had ticket with the travel agency, and for various reasons that was canceled. One time, for example, the alert status in the United States went to yellow, and his travel agent recommended that he not travel at that time. So we postponed that trip. Another time, his associate got scurvy. He had to wait a week or so before, or shingles, had to wait until he could heal up from that. Turned out the guy was embezzling him. So, you know, it's some interesting stories. We ended up flying down there about a half year later, and we actually got there right as his magnet motor was coming out of the machine shop, and a new version, the next iteration. His previous one was aluminum and was actually generating some eddy currents as the magnets were rotating around the shaft, and it was causing a braking effect.
Hmm.
And the thing was slowing down. And so he made one out of some plastics And we actually assembled it. We put the magnets in it and couldn't get it to work in the week that we were there. 2 months later, he sent us a video of the thing, and that's the video that a couple years later we put on our website when he was going to be making an announcement in on German television.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us permission to put that out there. Now over 1 million people have seen that video of that parent of motor spinning. It's really quite, you know, amazing to see this device. It's just magnets, repelling magnets, and off it spins. The thing's spinning quite rapidly, 100 RPMs.
Yeah. Sterling, on your website, and by the way, people, one of the main websites that that Sterling maintains and is involved with is called pureenergysystems.com. If you scroll about halfway down on the front page there, you'll see an image of the Parandev magnet motor. Is that the one that we're talking about there that's on your front page?
That's actually our replica of Mike Brady's device. We made a few little changes. It's a quarter scale unit, and it's rather than opening and closing in a clamshell arrangement, which is what Mike Brady had, and we did this with his permission. We were, you know, in good relationship or good rapport with him at the time. We were looking at licensing the thing to for North America to bring the technology over here, and we were also trying to help him internationally as he rolls this thing out. But rather than use this clamshell arrangement, we were bringing the stator in from the side. Our mechanical engineer thought that would be a good idea. We played with that thing and played with that thing, couldn't get it to work. A lot of people have seen that video and think it's spinning of its own volition or of its own power, but it's not. The spinning that you see in that video is from me turning the shaft by hand.
That little hand crank on it, yeah.
Yeah, it's not even a hand crank. I'm just grabbing the shaft and spinning it, giving it a whirl.
Mm.
And you can actually see me do that, and yet people think the thing's running on its own. It's kind of funny to me that they think that. I even say in the video that it's not doesn't work, that I'm spinning it by hand. People believe what they want to believe.
That's really true, yeah.
Yeah. But the one that he shows is really quite interesting. It's not skeptic-proof. You know, a skeptic could say, well, he's got a cheater device on the back there because he doesn't do the walk-around until after it starts decelerating when he disengages the clamshell stator. But it's interesting to see how it starts and stops. It doesn't just, you know, start spinning. It kind of rocks, and then it starts spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing when it decelerates. As it comes back down to a stop, it doesn't just stop to zero. It kind of rocks back and forth as it's going between magnet positions.
Mm, interesting.
And so, you know, I think that's quite convincing. And also, there's somebody who's coming through the video, and people say, oh, that's somebody who was back there doing a cheater device. Well, no, it's his maid. I met her. She's a nice lady. And the reason he actually did the walk around is because it's, oh, my gosh, she just, you know, she walks into the picture, and it's like, oh, got to change the view so we don't have my maid walking through the picture. And that's when he did the walk around.
Hmm.
So I'm convinced that it's legitimate technology. But I'll also say that as a business person, you know, one thing that very often happens in this field and other fields, but especially in energy, I've found the inventor, you have this phenomenon, number one, that it's, you know, my baby's the most beautiful baby syndrome. This is the technology that's going to rock the planet. And not only am I a brilliant inventor, but I also must therefore be a brilliant CEO. And those are different talents. They're very, very different skill sets, and they require a different mindset. And I found as we tried to do business with him that he was very, very difficult. His terms were outlandish. He didn't follow through with what he said he would do. You know, probably promised us 50 times to send us his patent information. And finally, when we got it 2 years later, it turned out it was not even a patent that was awarded. It was a patent application.
Mm.
And we found out about it because it went public knowledge because the time period lapsed. And so I would give a caution, a word of caution to anyone who's anticipating doing business with Mike Brady that, you know, he might have something that works, but do you want to sign your name on a dotted line with somebody who, is, you know, is not that reliable to keep good on his word? There are 20 people in Germany who have bought units, who haven't received units, who have complained, but they have no recourse because the wording of the contract was that it was an investment out of Switzerland. Hmm. And so basically, because it's an investment, it's, you know, you're lost, sorry, Charlie, you know.
Right.
It wasn't just like I'm buying product and he's not delivering product and therefore I can complain. This is an investment, and, well, it didn't happen like you thought it would. Well, that happens with investments, and so, sorry, there's no recourse. You know, there's a lot of people who are in that position, and, you know, when I did an interview with him a year ago in February, he said that since the June, July of the year before, he was producing 20 to 30 of these. He actually took that magnet motor concept, allegedly created an electromagnetic version that was even more powerful, 300 kilowatts.
Hmm.
He was claiming 30 kilowatts, which is enough to run three homes, peak load. With his pure magnet motor, now he's saying 100 and 300 kilowatt unit. These are electromagnetic versions of that magnet motor concept.
Holy cow.
And he said he's, you know, cranking out 20 to 30 of these a month for 6 months. And so right after that interview, I got back on the negotiation table with him and said, okay, let's get going here. Yeah. You know, let's go in and see this thing. Let's validate it. Let's get North America rolling. And he couldn't even send us a photograph of the thing.
Hmm.
Says, well, you know, I'm going to be going down there to the shop tomorrow. I'll take a picture of it. And the next time we talked, well, I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
so just never got anywhere with it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's inconceivable to me to think that if you're cranking out that many units, you don't even have a picture of the thing sitting on your computer.
Right, right.
So there's a BS factor that's extremely deep in his case. I'm not saying that everything that he's saying is BS and that he lies in everything he says, but when people invest in technologies, the invention itself is just part of what they look at. The team is more important to them than the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Is this team something I believe in? And are they capable of taking this the distance?
Right, right. Bringing it to market, et cetera.
Yeah, so finally I just had to walk away and say, you know, he might have something, but there's no way I want to be involved in signing my name in with contracts with him.
Mm, okay.
So that's what got me started in alternative energy.
Amazing.
Looking at his technology, and about 8 months after that, there was a guy named Carl Tilley who was going to demonstrate a technology at Nashville Super Speedway. This was an electric vehicle that he made that was allegedly pulling energy from the atmosphere somehow. And we basically drive perpetually, not perpetual motion, the energy's coming from somewhere, but would drive continuously without needing to be recharged. So he was going to do this demonstration on the Nashville Super Speedway, and I posted a coverage on that on our website, and Slashdot hit it, and we were getting 30,000 page views that day. And so we started doing updates, you know, every day thereafter, and that actually was what started my new service. That technology ended up being most likely a fraud. There may have been some legitimate technology there. A lot of people have sworn that there's something that worked there, the people that I interviewed that were involved in that project. But again, he as a person was not an honest character, and it was not somebody you wanted to go into business with and sign your name on the dotted line. I found him being extremely dishonest. So we ended up exposing him about 5 months later. But that's what started my news service. And as we started posting news stories, along with posting the news, we would categorize these things. If we had a solar story, we'd post it on a solar page. If we had a hydrogen story, we'd post it on a hydrogen page. And before long, we started getting a fairly serious collection of topics and news bullets. And it wasn't along the lines of comprehensive. It was more along the lines of what's the best stuff going on right now.
Mm-hmm. And well, I'll say you've got an amazing collection there, and for people who don't believe me, hop on over to pureenergysystems.com and just scroll down and keep your eye on the left-hand side of the page, and you'll see a directory there with energy topics. And I mean, there's everything from anti-gravity to cold fusion to Brown's gas to electric vehicles, electrolysis, all kinds of stuff, gravity motors, HPV stuff, nuclear, but, of course, solar and geothermal and the more traditional ideas about alternative energy, including wind. And I think maybe, Sterling, let's do that for a few minutes. Before we take a break, we got maybe 10 or 15 minutes or so. Let's talk about some of the more traditional ideas of alternative energy before we get into some of the more exotic types, okay?
Sure. One thing that I like to drive home with people is that renewable energy is going to do, and it is actually in process of doing the very same thing that we saw with computers. They're getting smaller, cheaper, and while fossil fuels are getting more and more expensive, we're seeing the opposite trend with renewables. They're getting cheaper, more affordable, more reliable, more user-friendly. And that trend is actually at a cross point with fossil fuels right now. 3 years ago, those huge wind turbines came into a parity with fossil fuel power plants.
Wow, 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
So they're on the plus side now.
Yeah, and those are those utility scales. They're not the ones that you can, you know, put in your backyard type of thing, the Windstream, for example.
Right, or the real big ones, right, that you see on the side of the highway or whatever.
5 megawatts
per
tower, yeah.
Right, incredible.
They're huge.
Oh, those fields of those things are so impressive when you drive by. I drive from Columbia, Missouri, up to Chicago now and again, and there's a wind farm, somewhere in mid-central Illinois, and, man, it's pretty big. It goes on for miles, and when they're all kind of going, it's pretty impressive to watch the whole thing.
I'm not sure, but those are probably 1 megawatt units.
Mm-hmm.
Over in Germany, they have some huge ones, especially when they go offshore. They can, where you've got the consistent wind.
Oh my God! In the ocean, yeah.
Yeah, and another thing that's really cool with it's kind of on the cutting edge of wind is floating platforms where they can actually go out further. It's not the eyesore anymore; it's out of visual shot of land. And so you don't have the complaints about you're ruining our shoreline because it's, you know, far enough away that you don't even see the visual impact.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you can transmit through cables back to land. But what you do is you take these oil rig platforms technology and you put wind on top of that.
Mm.
And you could also combine with that some of the wave technology underneath the platform as it's interacting with the waves.
Right.
I think that's what we're going to see coming in the next 5 to 10 years, and that's going to be probably what will push wind to be even cheaper than it is now.
Mm, cool.
And things like that. And also they're going to two tines. Right now you usually see three blades coming off these large turbines.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that maybe even two blades will be even more efficient.
Really? More like a prop on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, interesting.
And those, again, would be huge. So that's some stuff going on in wind. Solar.
Hey, let me ask you one quick one about wind. I was at a conference in Massachusetts a little while back, and there were a couple of people there that were sort of sharing ideas about wind, and they had some smaller units that were more suitable for individual use almost, like you might have a solar panel or something on your home, but this was a little wind generator that you could have somewhere on your property that would generate X number of watts for your own consumption. Do you know anything about those type of things?
The one that we typically recommend is Southwest Wind Power. I think they call it the SkyStream.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs, it's in the region of $5,000 to $10,000, and the return on investment is around 5 years on that. So you actually are going to break even on that one, but you know the return on investment is a little far out for most people. Most people like to see two to three years, but it is something that is cost effective even on a residential level. If you have a fair amount of wind, if you live in Cheyenne, for example, that's
right,
a great
right.
place to put one up. Even here in Utah, we have some pretty good wind where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the times you run into zoning problems where they don't want you going up higher than, you know, 60 feet or so.
Right.
But that tower is not that high. It's a great system. So, yeah, even residential is starting to come into being commercially viable.
Okay.
You know, once it starts getting to the point where, like this citizenry thing that you saw a couple of years ago, where this with the solar technology, where they were going to basically, they own the solar panels, they install them on your home, you pay them for the electricity, and they have a contract with you that you will pay at or below what you're presently paying for from your local utility, and they lock you in on that price for like 5 years. And that was a really hot thing. People were jumping all over that. They were signing up people left and right to get involved in that. Turns out that they didn't have the funding secured, and they didn't have the technology secured.
Yeah, go figure, huh?
Yeah.
Another like, God, like you say, there's a lot of potential, but there's also a lot of traps you got to be careful about there.
I don't know that one was fraud. I think it was more recklessness.
Right, they just didn't implement correctly or something.
Yeah, they had a great idea, and it was a pipe dream. And
but you're still paying. You're still paying these guys, you know, for it every year. It seems like even though you can lock in at a price or whatever, I think that a lot of people are.
The thing that's nice about it is they cover the capital costs. You don't have to worry about return on investment.
Right.
You're paying them below what you're paying the local utility, and it's clean energy. That was their business model.
Right, I understand. Okay. Right.
In fact, you can go to their website even now, and they're still touting that whole business model.
What else is happening in solar?
Well,
pretty exciting things. I've actually read some remarkable stories over the last, God, I bet you, I mean, here and there for 10 years about advancements in efficiency and full spectrum, this and that, and then now pliable materials you can fold and put in your backpack, all kinds of things. But maybe you could sort of give us a general breakdown of what's happening in solar.
Yeah. Solar is breaking into grid parity. In the next 2 to 3 years, we'll see it come into being commercially competitive with natural gas power plants, for example. There are some grid power plants that are being installed that will be able to come in and meet the price point that you're paying for natural gas power, which is kind of the cheapest power right now in many areas of the country, as well as coal. So you're paying 3 to 4 cents wholesale per kilowatt hour. That's coming right now. These are plants that are already funded. They're in process of being rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
In our top 100 energy technologies listing, we've got 3 or 4 commercial scale, utility scale systems that are going to be at or below grid parity.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, question comes up from email here about solar. Again, the same question that they had about wind, individual type systems for somebody who wants to get off the grid on their own.
Yeah, our specialty is on the cutting edge stuff of what's coming tomorrow. We feel there's enough representation out there of what's already available today that, you know, there's plenty of places to get that kind of information. Great websites out there that, you know, the stores where you can purchase solar systems and shop around and see what's going to be best for your situation, where you live. Do you have a lot of sun? Do you have a lot of wind? You know, one that I did an interview on today that everyone listening to this show should consider doing to save energy and electricity and to lessen their footprint on the planet. It's this ground source heat pump technology.
Geothermal type stuff.
Yeah, and this is well proven. I mean, this is 2 decades old stuff, and very few people know about it or appreciate it. It's not as sexy. You don't see it float around. When it's down on the ground, you don't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
If a house has it, you don't know it. But you're using the ground, which is a fairly consistent temperature,
right,
down below frost line. I mean, you know, down below 3 feet or so. And so you use the cool ground in the summer to pre-cool the air before you, you know, use your air conditioner to further cool it down for your house. And in the winter, you preheat the air coming into the home,
right,
by passing it through the ground.
Right.
And the return on investment on those is, for a retrofit, is 3 to 5 years, and for a new installation for a new home is 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow, that's something that's pretty attractive to a lot of people, I imagine.
Yeah. And there's really no home that is counterindicated for that. Basically, if you've got, you come in with this rig and they drill these small holes in the ground. I did a radio interview on my Free Energy Now radio show today,
mm-hmm,
with these guys that have an awesome system. And, you know, they've been in business for 20 years. They've got patents. They've got installers all over the country. They're in, like, 12 other countries,
wow,
as well. So, you know, this is not cutting-edge stuff. This is well-proven stuff that anyone can and should do, I think.
Okay. All right. I will add for people, if you're interested in some of the details of stuff, and if you click on any of these topics in the directory over there at pureenergysystems.com, for example, the solar, it certainly will give you a good... It takes you over to your wiki site, Sterling,
right?
The PES wiki, which is really cool because for people who are familiar with Wikipedia, they have a similar setup. And if you click on the solar one, just for example, there's a whole bunch of them over there. But that's just one we were talking about. You'll find all kinds of information that'll lead you all about your way, and you can find out as much as you'd like to know about any of these technologies. And I think you've done an amazing job, Sterling, of bringing all this stuff together. Really, really remarkable. So thank you.
Well, yeah, and there have been a lot of people that have helped get it to this point as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
The only one involved here.
Well, you know, all of you together, you're doing a great job. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back and talk some more about some of these other ideas, all right?
Okay.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Mr. Sterling Allen. You can find information on the web at pureenergysystems.com. And we'll be back with Sterling in just a few minutes, and we'll talk more about alternative energy, all kinds of different things. I'm just looking at the list on my computer screen here now, and there's plenty to talk about. And I encourage all of you who are out there listening to either send me an email or hop on the chat, and I'll try to peek over there and get at your questions as well, so we can see what Sterling has to say about some of the things that are coming from out there in your minds as well, okay? All right, it's Mike, and it is Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 12:35 a.m. now on the 29th of April, 2008. Once again, good friends, Blue Rodeo. This one is called Get Through to You. Back in just a moment with Sterling Allen. Blue Rodeo. That one's called Get Through to You. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. You're listening to it here. It's about 20 minutes before the hour of 1 a.m. We've got Sterling Allen on the line with us from his place in Utah. And it's a pleasure to have you on the air with us tonight, Sterling. Thanks for staying up late into the evening.
Actually, I'm not staying up late. I always stay up this late.
Another night owl, huh?
Yeah, I'm almost always going to bed around midnight to 1.
Yeah, I tend to get most of my work done in the wee hours as well. But anyway, let's get back to alternative energy talk.
You know, back to wind. There's some other things that are really fun in wind that not as many people know about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, the higher you go, the stronger the wind.
Yeah.
And you combine the concept of a kite with the concept of a turbine, and there's a lot of really cool designs to get the wind, get to the wind tower that's way up there, the jet stream kind
of
stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and actually Google has invested in one of the companies called Mackinac Power, and they're pretty tight-lipped about what it is and how it works, but the fact that Google's invested, you know, some millions of dollars in it, $10 million, I think, at least.
What are they called, Mackinac?
Mackinac. We've got a feature page. They're in our top 100 as well.
The top 100, I've had people asking already for me to ask you about, you know, perhaps good alternative energy companies to invest in. I'll have them take a look at this top 100 list.
Sure. The URL, we have a shortcut domain name, top100energy.com. The number 100 is not spelled out, but
yeah,
it's just the number 100. And that's generated, we haven't mentioned yet, the New Energy Congress that I founded about two and a half years ago.
Yeah.
You know, in looking outside the box at these exotic and upcoming technologies, there's a lot of noise. You know, people think they've got something and it's really not what they thought it was. And you've got the fraud, you've got the you know, BS kind of stuff. And then you have some stuff that's marginal, and then you have some really good stuff. And sifting through all of that is a Herculean task, and I think most people are not cut out for that. And I think that's why in the start of the show where we talked a little bit about my background, I think it's very relevant because in being outside the box in religion and politics, I really kind of got the balls to stand up to the bullies.
Right. And you've seen a whole lot of stuff in the past to let you know a little bit more about how the game is played.
Yeah, and so, you know, you hear all these war stories about somebody who had a car that ran on water, and before you know it, they're poisoned. They, you know, in the restaurant, they say, "I've just been poisoned." They keel over dead. Stanley Myers.
Motor guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have at PES Wiki, we've got an index of different suppressed technologies, some 35 documented cases of inventors who were threatened, killed, their family threatened, et cetera, who were suppressed in one way or another. Even Nikola Tesla was suppressed significantly and was not able to go forward with a lot of the things. You know, he was at least 200 years ahead of his day.
Yeah, he was just remarkable. He's one of the people that I consider just an absolute hero of mine. And the more I learn about him, the more astonished I am about what he was capable of doing, and like you say, so much of what he had in mind never came to fruition because there were a lot of sort of forces that were sort of in a very sinister way pitted against him.
Yeah. So when you're outside the box, not only do you have the suppression element, you know, the men in black factor, the fear factor that people deal with, but you also have the flaky factor, you have the BS factor, and you have the diamond in the rough, these really odd personalities, people who are brilliant, oftentimes don't develop the same social skills that you and I, that we hope we have.
Right, and become difficult to deal with on a personal basis.
Yeah, they're very difficult, and that's one of our 10 criteria in our top 100 list is politics of science. You might have a brilliant inventor, but if you can't have a straight conversation with him, you know, that basically he becomes his own worst enemy. He becomes the greatest impediment to his technology going anywhere because you can't talk to him about it.
I've seen that happen on people I've had in my program before, and it's painful to see it actually because you think, man, if this person could just get it together in a personal sense, you know, their own skills about how to, you know, how to communicate with others about this stuff and how to be reasonable about it. Boy, it could, you know, it could really be remarkable, but they, in certain cases, you know, they just make it very difficult for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I was hearing a story about a month ago about a guy who had this lightweight fabric that you could wear that was fireproof and bulletproof.
Huh, right on. Like that vest that Frodo wore in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah. I mean, this is billion-dollar technology, yeah. And the guy just, you know, no one's been able to interface with him. He's got ridiculous terms that he wants going into the contracts, and just is not going to go anywhere because of the inventor.
Amazing.
And so that, you know, that it takes a kind of a special personality to be able to deal with all that stuff.
Right, and sort through it all.
And one of the things that I found is that the men in black factor is actually a very small part of the pie chart of what the obstacles that have to be overcome to make its market. I give it 10% of the pie chart.
Mm.
It's there. But it's not the 90% that is sometimes perceived by the paranoid.
Right. So the 90% sort of takes care of itself by its own.
Well, part of it is having working technology, getting it validated, getting it funded. That's 10-20% of the five pie chart, is getting good money.
Right.
40% of that pie chart is interpersonal conflicts, mm-hmm. people that can't get along together, teams that just won't work.
Right, right, right.
That is the biggest obstacle by far. Men in black is an obstacle, but not as big as interpersonal conflict.
No, but perhaps one that's sort of like the last line of defense. In other words, it's not required to be that big of a factor because you know, the situations sort of take care of themselves. But perhaps, you know, the ones that don't take care of themselves, that actually do get their acts together, well, then they have to deal with this next level, perhaps.
Yeah. There's a phenomena here you see on our website. I've got the statement, he who is one step ahead is a genius, he who is two steps ahead is a crackpot.
Hmm.
And kind of where we deal is in the two steps ahead stuff. And so our audience is automatically pared down significantly because of that. You know, the solar and wind, that's one step ahead stuff.
Right, right.
Cold fusion magnet motors, that's two steps ahead stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much of a leap for most people, but our audience is growing, and we try and bring, as you mentioned, I really appreciate your introduction. It was very, very well stated. I appreciate how you put that together and described, you know, what we do and what I'm about. It's quite accurate. But by putting solar and wind in the same pot of free energy, people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And by helping them realize, you know, that's free energy, why can't we just use our imagination? You know, obviously, you know, none of us have been, not too many people have been outside in the jet stream to personally experience that, but we know from maps and from other scientific data that's been collected that it exists. You know, planes fly in it and it accelerates their speed, etc. And so just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Hmm.
I mean, you're using a radio right now to broadcast this, and I don't know that anyone has the ability to see radio waves, but obviously they exist.
Right, right.
And just because I've got this magnet motor that is spinning with no fuel required and there's no electrical input doesn't mean there's not energy coming from somewhere.
Right, right. It's just we're not familiar quite with it yet.
It might be zero-point energy. It might be a new form of, maybe it creates a local vortex in the magnetic field and you kind of get a draining of the bathtub effects, so to speak.
Yeah, there's an interesting section on your website about vortex energy. And, again, this is one that's sort of two or three steps ahead, perhaps, but a really interesting one because there's some pretty interesting data coming out of that field.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we try and do, too. We, you know, on our magnet motor page, the things that are featured first are those technologies where they actually claim to have a working prototype. And then near the bottom of the page are people with interesting ideas about, you know, what if types of things.
While you mentioned magnetic motors, I have a question from the audience about Tom Bearden's MEG motor, or it's an EM generator, actually, I think.
Motionless electromagnetic generator, MEG.
Right.
Any comments on that? Tom Bearden is one of these geniuses who has had a great impact on the field. And he's probably so far ahead that most people, when they read his stuff, just think, oh, this guy's out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a lazy way of getting out of having to put your brain to work. You think you already know everything.
Right. Yeah, his books are remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, 600 pages of calculus. Kind of thing, you know, I haven't even tried to start reading his books. But even though I had a little bit of calculus in my schooling, you know, that was back then, and I understood it at the time, and I got my end the test, and it's probably forgot everything I learned.
Yeah, like most people with their math classes.
Yeah. But Tom Bearden is I think, definitely a force to be reckoned with. His technology has allegedly been replicated by Jean-Louis Norden over in France, who has replicated a lot of stuff. He's kind of the laboratory of the free energy world.
Well, it's now, amazing because, on a personal note, I've had communication via email with Tom for a number of years and a couple of guys that are associated with him, but he is absolutely will not make any media appearances, and he's actually very concerned about his own well-being, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I actually asked him on my show last week, and I've not heard back from him, even though we were in...
Well, I hope you have... I hope you do. I mean, I hope somebody gets a chance to talk with that man, because...
Well, he has been on camera before. There is a
series... But it's real old stuff, right? That stuff from, like, the 80s, right?
No, it's recent stuff.
Oh, really? This is news to me.
Hunt for Zero-Point Energy, I think, is what it's called. It's a series, and he and Tom Bearden are featured... I mean, and not Tom Bearden, that's who we were just talking about.
Oh, Bedini, perhaps.
Bedini, yeah.
Yeah, John Bedini. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His stuff's in there. There's like, they've got three videos now in this DVD set. And if you go to Penn's Wiki, if you type in Tom Bearden, you'll come up to a little feature page we have about him, and there will be a link to that DVD set there.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, the motionless electromagnetic generator, that's a solid state energy harvester from the vacuum or from the electromagnetic forces around us, and that is one of the most one of the neatest technologies. If once that arrives, electricity will be 1/10 the cost of what it is now, and 1/10 the size. You'll be able to have a generator the size of a shoebox in your garage that powers your house.
Wow! So let me ask you a little bit more about that, because I think that's more along the lines of what, at least a lot of the listeners of this program are looking for. They're looking for autonomy, you know. They're looking for a way to get away from Commonwealth Edison or whoever, and also be able to sustain their own areas without having to worry about, you know, somebody else taking down the power lines or whatever, you know. But this is a really interesting one. What's your level of confidence on the MEG as far as its performance and legitimacy?
On a scale of 1 to 10, my personal level of confidence is about a 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's above 5.
Wow, yeah.
But it's not up there near 10 because...
Well, you got to see it and experience it, I guess.
Yeah, and on the New Energy Congress, whenever it's been brought up, there have been a number of people who have been pretty naysaying about it, and they give some pretty good reasons as to why, you know, there's some skepticism to be had there. But I don't think that it's certainly not something that you toss out as being illegitimate. I do think that there's something there that will materialize at some point. There's a lot of people chasing electromagnetic stuff. One of the earlier projects we had was an open source of John Bedini's technology, where you've got these magnets taped to the outer perimeter of a wheel, a monopole orientation, and then you've got this coil you wrap, and you get a little transistor and a couple of diodes, and you've got yourself this little battery charger where you have an input battery, an output battery, and your output battery can be a higher voltage than your input battery, and it will continue to be charged. You can, you know, supercharge it while the input battery is just, you know, going down, and then you can switch places. And there's some people with that open source project who are sure that they're now in over Unity, who are actually getting more energy out of the system than what they put into it.
Hmm.
In other words, there's some energy being harnessed from the environment somehow through that system.
Right, amazing.
And I've seen that system go solid state. I was the first one to replicate it in that open source project. You know, we went up there to his lab. We saw him. He agreed to let us open source it, and we posted a clear set of plans of how to do it. I built one. My mother-in-law was the second one. It's so easy. I mean, she has hardly any scientific background, and she built one that worked. But, you know, within a week of me building this thing, you know, I was just playing around with different things, and all of a sudden I heard this humming sound, like a transformer coming from my coil. And I measured and I was getting current going from my input battery to the output battery, and the wheel was sitting there without moving.
Hmm.
It was just sitting there still as it could be. I had achieved a solid-state situation with that setup.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, so what comes of this stuff? In other words, these are all very encouraging ideas and experiences and experiments, I guess. But I guess this is where the pie chart comes in a way, because it's not the only problem. You have to have a lot of other things come together in order to make this thing useful for people.
Well, one of the things that's happening now in defiance of the Men in Black phenomena and other obstacles is that more and more people are realizing that we've got to get off of oil, and we've got to pursue alternatives. And obviously there's a subset of people who are going to be looking far outside the box, and they'll come across our stuff. And we have a lot of people who are very grateful for the kinds of things that we're putting up there, and people are thinking about and trying different things. And, you know, going to the garage and tinkering around with different things. There's going to be some stuff coming out of this that is going to make it to the market. I can't help but think that it's going to be, rather than two steps ahead to the planet, it'll just be baby steps. You know, we'll continue to make incremental steps like we did in the computer industry. Sometimes there's more significant breakthroughs that come along. You get the laptop that comes along. In fact, one of the guys who's in the New Energy Congress, Jim Dunn, as an advisor, he came up with the idea of the laptop.
Awesome.
You know, now he was involved in what's called the Technology or Center for Technology Commercialization, where they take these NASA technologies that were ready to go commercial, and that's not something that NASA does. So they work with his organization. They would then take these technologies commercial.
Hmm.
And so we have people like that who have a lot of muscle. They've got, you know, he lives over in MIT land in Boston. He's got friends in GM. He's got friends in GE. He's got friends all over the place. Today I was talking to him about, you know, his associates in Golden, Colorado that are electromagnetic experts in motor technology that we were going to throw after it. New technologies come across our desk in the last week. You know, so we're basically doing some preliminary due diligence to check up on these guys. And he, you know, there's enough promise there that, you know, he's starting to make some muscle show here. And if this thing's for real, I mean, if there's a real technology out there, there's a lot of muscle power that can be brought to bear in helping it move forward in an expedited way.
Right. All right, look, we are just about the top of the hour, so we're going to take a little break here, and we'll come back, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the New Energy Congress, okay?
Okay.
All right, we'll do that in just a few minutes. Take a nice breather here, everyone. We've got about 5.5 minutes for this song, and then we'll come back and talk once again with Sterling Allen on the web. Number of different websites, but I think the best place to start off is pureenergysystems.com. And from there, you can link up to the other sites and the other projects that Sterling is involved with. Wonderful stuff and a great collection of information here at PES. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's just about 1 a.m. now in the morning, April 29th, 2008. Pleasure to be with you all. Thanks for listening. We'll play a piece of music here from Blue Rodeo. This one is called Side of the Road, one of my favorite tunes. And we will come back then and talk once again with Sterling Allen. Once again, on the web at pureenergysystems.com. My website, of course, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. And the radio station, always KOPN.org.
Field and I looked up into the
blue-white skies. Started singing this song in my head just because the sun.
Of the Road, Blue Rodeo. All the stuff you're hearing tonight is from a disc that's called Nowhere to Hear, one of my favorite CDs, and it's, I don't know, sort of dating myself, I guess, because I'm sure it's probably mid-90s when this stuff was originally released, but wonderful stuff. Blue Rodeo, Canadian band, and that one was called Side of the Road. We'll hear a couple more between now and the end of the program, okay? All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just a little after 1 o'clock now, my guest is Sterling Allen, doing some amazing work in the fields of alternative energy and sharing a lot of what he knows with us tonight. We'll get right back to him right now and say hello. Hi, Sterling.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for sticking around.
Not a problem.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the new Energy Congress and what it is and what the purpose of it is.
Okay. The reason I started that out is because, you know, in trying to weed through all the different technology claims that are out there, it really gets kind of unwieldy as to, you know, what's real, what's not. And there's a good brain trust of people out there among the different associates that I've rubbed shoulders with over the years. And I thought, you know, why not pull together an organization of people who are, you know, share the interests of these outside-the-box technologies, exotic clean energy technologies that are poo-pooed by academia and yet seem to have something to them. They might not fit into our present understandings of physics, but, you know, any time a major breakthrough comes along, it usually fits that caliber. Flight is a good example. Physics said it was impossible at the time. Obviously, they were wrong. And so, you know, the new wine cannot fit into old bottles is an age-old real statement. And if academia says something is impossible, it makes me really curious about it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, let's see if we can make this work. It kind of, I get my jollies that way almost.
It's like the reverse psychology. If they tell you it ain't going to work, that's one probably to take a look at.
Yeah. Especially when people are getting keeled over for playing with the stuff. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of need for friendship of these technologies as well as the scrutinizing of the technologies. And so I founded the New Energy Congress with the intent of having a cadre of people who can look at these technologies and kind of give their assessment and review based on, you know, 10 criteria that we use: clean, green, affordable, reliable, safe, credible, the politics of science we mentioned. There's some of the main criteria. And we put them all in the same playing field. Solar is right there next to cold fusion and magnet motors. And sometimes, you know, there's been this debate in the New Energy Congress. Well, why don't we just focus on the technologies that really need our attention, and let's not play with solar and wind that get plenty of attention out there but in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument comes back each time that that debate comes up, that we need to have our feet on the ground of realism. And by looking at what's real, what's out there, looking at real businesses and what, how real businesses operate and what real business plans look like and what real technologies do, it helps us be more prepared to bring some real resources to bear when some of this more exotic stuff comes along and is ready to go the distance.
Hmm.
And so by having, and also there's the element we talked about earlier of, you know, that let's, if we're just dealing with two steps ahead technology, we've got a very small audience.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can bridge that gap by covering both one and two steps ahead technologies, then people can take the one step to the, you know, solar and wind. They can comprehend that. And it's only one more step to go mm-hmm. to the more exotic stuff.
Yeah, I understand. I think it's a reasonable philosophy, I understand, how to move forward with it. So, you know, on the other hand, I got people saying, well, yeah, but we don't have a lot of time, you know, that we're in deep doo-doo right now, and there are a whole lot of things that are happening on the planet that are apparently unsustainable in the course of very short order.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the best technologies, one of the best genres of technology, I should say, that I love to cover is waste to energy. You know, we're throwing a lot of stuff away every day.
Yeah, sure.
In our landfills, and there's no reason to. We can turn that into energy affordably. I mean, there are technologies right now that can take your waste stream and turn it into high-quality diesel, ethanol, can turn it into electricity, can turn it into... There's a lot of technologies that are chasing that area that are commercially plausible. I mean, mm-hmm. these are money-making ventures where by the time you have the tipping fees of the incoming trash, you have the commodities that are coming out of some of the ash and whatnot that you can put into roadways. You've got the electricity that you can generate. You've got the methane that's coming off that you can turn into fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of products that are coming from these different approaches.
Is anybody doing that on a large scale yet?
Yes. There's a lot of technologies. I mean, for example, waste management, which is one of the largest collectors of garbage.
Yeah, Denver, Colorado, for sure, because I remember they used to come by my house. And I'm sure they're all over the place, but I know they're certainly in the West.
I did an interview with them about 6 months ago, and they've done like 130 landfills where they're gathering the methane coming off of that, and they're using it to run power plants.
Wow, cool.
Or they're sending it off to a local industry that needs methane.
Interesting.
And so it is happening, and major industries are pursuing it, and that's definitely an area where, you know, people are looking for places to invest. There's some really good technologies that are just really deserving of some good support.
Okay. All right, and the Congress, again, to sort of wrap that up, is essentially an official type organization to try to wade through most of this stuff and just try to come up with some reasonable answers for people.
Yeah, and right now it's largely all volunteer, but we would like to get funding so that we can have a lot more people on salary so they can spend more time doing this stuff, so that rather than just having two or three of us kind of pulling all the information together and putting it up in the directors and in the news from all these great sources that, you know, people feeding us information, we can have one person whose expertise is solar. And so you go to our solar page, and it's got the best technologies available right now for commercial, the best ones for residential.
Right. That's what we're looking for, is someone to do sort of the homework for us. So,
yeah.
So and wade through all the stuff and do these verifications and then bring the best of it to the public so they can get a look at it themselves then.
Right now you go to our solar page, and it's a little bit overwhelming. There's
so much information. You could spend a whole lot of time there, you know.
Yeah. And what we try to do with each of our directory pages is, it's not, as you see in a lot of directories, I'll just put things alphabetically. I try to put things by caliber.
More relationship.
Yeah. You know, it's categorized. So we have the solar page is subdivided into a lot of other pages. We have just one page on alternatives to silicon, for example. Because silicon is somewhat of a logjam right now with its limitation in supply. And we have a page on solar thermal projects. We have a page on, we just started a page on these wind cells or the solar cells where they go up into space and they use a solar wind to propel themselves along. So, you know, we try and subcategorize it. And then on each page, the things that are listed first are generally the best. And the things that are listed toward the bottom are, you know, not as good. But not, I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff buried down below as well. So don't, you know, don't think that
right,
just...
Right, but it's just further away from that ground that you were talking about before.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it'd be nice to get some funding so that we can really put more manpower behind this idea of featuring the very best things first. So people can be so we can expedite this moving forward of these technologies.
Right, right, and shake it out so we find out what's what. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You mentioned ethanol briefly. Is that a viable source, or is it? I've read sort of competing ideas on that. Some people say it's just another racket, and others say, well, no, if you do it right, it's actually, you know, quite good.
Well, if you're getting your ethanol from algae, there's, you know, you'll never run out of places to build algae plants, and you can actually run your output from your coal fire plant through an algae system, gathers the CO2 and turns it into biomass, which you can then turn into ethanol, which you can turn into, you can burn the biomass and turn into the syngas. There's a lot of really clean, great technologies. And there's no reason that we should be, our present mindset is cradle to grave. And it really should be cradle to cradle. We should have this ecological mindset of, when I'm done with this, it goes here, goes into the ground, or goes, you know, our plastics, for example, we should throw them in the landfill. Well, why not take the energy that's in the plastic at least and turn it into, to methanol, or turn it into to diesel, and there is a technology up in Washington. I have the hardest time remembering the name of the company, but they're near the top of our listing on waste to energy, and they're turning the complete waste stream into high quality diesel fuel, and they're just about done with the first 100 ton per day plant, and they have two or three demo units that people are coming from all over the planet to see, to license. That is a killer technology.
Wow,
right,
cool.
There.
Well, I love the algae idea. I mean, that's one you never hear about, and it's like that's the one they should be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, every day there are 100 news stories from across the planet that we could put in our news, and we try and find the ones that are kind of right there on the cutting edge, the most leading edge, the most, making the biggest difference, dropping the price of energy the most, and making those, that's what we try and feature. And we also have sympathy for the things that are outside the box. And so if something is solar, you know, somebody just got $10, $50 million for some solar installation, that's not going to get covered as much as somebody who just replicated a cold fusion experiment that can lead to a product within 5 years.
Right, right. All right, well, that's another one that's on my list. I have people asking if there's any new news in the cold fusion world, and maybe you could give a little bit of background on that, too. A lot of people aren't familiar with it, but there was, you know, so much controversy with the Fleischmann and his partner, you know, years ago, and it never really has been resolved.
Well, that's what they think. In reality, cold fusion is one of the more legitimate of all the exotic technologies.
Hmm.
There have been hundreds of replications of the effect that have been published in journals, not necessarily peer-reviewed journals. Some of the major journals blacklist. I mean, you can't get listed. Even though you can have the best scientific method, but because of the politics of it, they won't let you publish it.
Yeah, I've had a number of brushes with this, Archive X that's run by Cornell. It's more of a physics clearinghouse, but it's essentially peer review online, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain topics that, as you mentioned, and I know, you know, very credible people that when they cross the line over certain things, forget it. You just will not get that published. It won't even make it to the review, you know.
Yeah, it's really sad when things get politicized like that and science goes out the window. And science becomes religious in that regard, where they close their mind. The scientific method goes out the door. It's really pathetic, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And cold fusion is probably the best example of that, because cold fusion is definitely a real phenomena. It's definitely a technology of tomorrow, and there are a number of people who are skirting getting it to the point where it can be commercially viable. And the one that we have featured on our Cold Fusion directory page is called Jet Energy, J-E-T Energy. And he is from MIT, and he did a five-day consecutive demonstration of a cold fusion process where they were getting more energy out than what they put in, demonstrated in front of PhD physicists from around the world at a conference, undisputed.
This is like four-inch headline stuff, and you never even hear about it, you know?
Yep. And you run across that kind of stuff all the time when something becomes political, that's what happens. It's very unfortunate. And even people like Al Gore will stay away from the subject because, you know, he's a political creature and he knows.
And he's also heavily invested in Occidental Petroleum. But at any rate, I think there's certainly political problems and status quo problems, you know, and I think you cannot discount the power, you know, and the stroke that's wielded by the petrochemical industry.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a cynic about it. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, certainly.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the whole oligarchy, if you want to call it that.
The oligarchy, that's pretty good.
has a lot of muscle in preventing some of these things from going forward. And there's definitely bullies on the block that are not wanting to see this stuff come forward because it does threaten their power structure.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also among them those who are forward-thinking are actually trying to jump into the whole fray. One of the funniest stories I came across was about a year ago, maybe 9 months ago, over in Europe. The Club of Rome was coming up with a grid for all of the clean energy systems. It's like the Club of Rome is, in my opinion, one of the darkest organizations on the planet.
Oh, yeah. For people who are familiar with, you know, Dr. John Coleman, I think, in that classic, the Committee of 300, right, or something like that, mentions the Club of Rome as one of the major troublesome bodies over there in Europe and with global influence.
Yeah. And here was a story where they were trying to loop all of the wind and solar technologies into a renewable grid. It's like gridizing renewable energy, which is really supposed to be distributed energy, not gridified.
Mm.
Not that putting solar into the grid is a problem, but I just thought it was funny that this kind of like they saw the handwriting on the wall and they wanted to they didn't want to be left behind.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of you mentioned this company Jet, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's developing cold fusion technology. In what sense, again, is this something that's, you know, the box that you have in your garage that powers the whole block, or is it more of a centralized, what are they trying to build?
Yeah, in my understanding of cold fusion is it could be scaled down enough that you could actually have a unit powering a home. Probably the best level of most efficient use will be a neighborhood power station.
Mm.
It could also provide, you know, power plant, utility scale, 2 gigawatt type of stuff as well. But, you know, just...
What's a normal household use in energy consumption, just so people get an idea of scale?
OK, Okay, when you talk about a house, there's something you have to bear in mind. And that is, it's not like you have this constant usage of, you know, the average. Somebody told me this anecdote one time, and I think it's pretty close to being true. And that is, peak usage or average usage is 5% of peak usage. And so if your average usage is 0.5 kilowatts, your peak usage is going to be like, 10 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. So when you've got the washer and the stove going.
Right, and the stereo's blasting.
Coming home from dinner and everyone with the TV's on and the stereo lights are blaring. You know, then you're probably 10 kilowatts, but then everyone goes to bed.
In the middle of the night. Mm-hmm.
Right. So the average is around half a kilowatt.
But you got to be able to generate for peak.
Right. If you don't have batteries. If you got a battery system, then the battery can basically deliver what you want when you need
on
it.
On demand, yeah. And batteries are getting much more improved as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, we that's one of the things we cover. We have a fairly exhaustive listing of different battery technologies that are coming down the pike. Some really cool ones that will make it so that your electric vehicles will go 500 miles and can charge in 5 minutes.
All right, speaking of that, there was a question that came up in my forum a couple weeks ago when I announced that you were going to be on the program, and a young man asked, there's a mileage gain challenge on right now between skeptics and supporters of Dennis Lee, who's made some modifications to a gasoline engine. Could you talk a little bit about that and what the results were?
Sure. What happened was, this is a technology...
And a little background, sure, if you don't mind.
Sure. This was one of the... Apart from Dennis Lee, there's a technology that is called hydroxy... or Brown's gas. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
what you have is you have an electrolyzer. You have two plates, anode, cathode, that come from the battery of your car that create gas from the water. You get hydrogen, oxygen gas coming off. And depending on how you arrange your cathodes and anodes and how you pulse the electricity across them, you can get some very unusual properties coming off of the gas. You get monatomic hydrogen, monatomic oxygen. This is supposed to be impossible. Again, we get to this quote-unquote impossible. And a lot of people have seen the Denny Klein video from about a year ago. I probably had one person a day sending me a copy of this and say,
check this out.
Where they're taking this torch and they wave it across their hand, it doesn't burn them, and then they sublimate tungsten in about 2 seconds with the same torch, same setting. And tungsten has like this super high.
I know.
Yeah.
That's
so there's some.
Well, hold on a second. With regard to Brown's gas again, and the fact that you're getting these monatomic elements coming off, again, verified?
Yes, there have been scientific studies on those that are showing the characteristics of monatomic, and I don't have that in my hip pocket that I can give you a chapter verse of who did that when.
No, I take your word for it.
Yeah, but
I can check it out further if they're interested, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to find. It's not something that you'll find readily, just because academia stays away from this kind of stuff.
Right.
And so it's usually somebody who was doing it at midnight when nobody was looking in the university laboratory.
That's about the best time to get in there, I heard.
Yeah. I had a friend, have a friend down in the San Luis Valley, Utah, who came up with a technology where he can measure any element. He can detect any element from as far as a mile away. And he took some of this Brown's gas and measured, and he was actually finding tritium in there.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So there could be some nuclear stuff going on there, but it there's some ionic stuff going on. It's very unusual. I think one of the things that here's what's going on. People take an electrolyzer, put it in their car, They make hydroxy gas, which comes off the top, and then they run that into the air intake, and then it combines with the fuel mixture, and it catalyzes a more efficient burn of the fuel. Mm-hmm. So you,
you improve your mileage, you decrease your emissions, you increase your torque. By your mileage is improved by somewhere between 20% and 40% are kind of some of the claims you see out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did a we just produced a story a couple of days ago on a little rally that took place between Washington D.C. and Florida. Three cars that were hydroxy systems, and there was a Ford or a Toyota Prius that went from a 42-45 mile per gallon average, which is that's the sticker plate type of thing.
Right.
Went to 64 miles per gallon.
Wow.
On this trip. And that was with Bob Boyce in his car. He was driving the Prius in his system, a 100-plate cell in his trunk that he was running.
And they're driving, typical, whatever, highway. They're not going 20 miles an hour, in other words.
Right.
Driving
he was going 65 on the way back. And
okay.
On the way down, they were going slow because one of the vehicles was geared for 45 miles an hour, so they were puttering along pretty slow.
All right, so there are modifications to current fuel systems that are being experimented with, and they're seeing some success.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, our fuel efficiency page, there's probably some 1,000 technologies that you can, fuel additives, oil additives, paint that you can paint on your car or on the back of your car to reduce the drag, like on a truck, for example, a semi. There's not 1,000 different kinds of approaches, but 1,000 different, technologies at least to improve mileage. And most of them, work to some degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I like to recommend is the easiest, quickest change. I just throw this in as a footnote, and then we'll get back to hydroxy.
Right.
And Dennis Lee, who is one of the proponents of hydroxy. He's not the only one. He's one of many. But the technology I like to recommend is a pulse plug. It replaces your spark plug. It has a capacitor inside of it, and what it does between it stores up the energy between pulses, and then as it discharges, not as a spark, but as like a corona effect, it burns more fuel more efficiently so that you improve your torque, you decrease your mileage, you decrease your emissions. And they're saying 6% on their website. I have a friend who had who went 25,000 miles since August, and in his Suburban, he got a 40% improvement in his mileage using that. He saved $2,500 in gas.
Remarkable.
Yeah. So that's one I'd like to. And if you use the promotion code PES, here's a little advertisement,
right,
you can get a 10% discount on that product.
All right. So people, you can take a look at that at the website and decide if it might be something that you're interested in, okay?
So back to hydroxy.
Yeah, back to hydroxy and this racer or whatever that was going on.
It's one of many ways that you'll never hear from GM or from the big automobile manufacturers. There's a zillion ways to improve your mileage, including good driving habits.
Mm.
But hydroxy is one of the more expensive and long-lasting things that you can do to your engine. It's something you're going to be putting inside your engine. You're going to be putting some holes in your tubing, and you're making some modifications, and it could even have some ramifications on states that say you can't mess around with
emissions and warranties and all that sort of thing.
We don't care about what's coming out the tailpipe. We just care you're not you don't mess around with our emission system. It's ridiculous.
Right.
But you're going to have to know the law in the state that you're in when you start doing this kind of stuff, as well as, realize ramifications of what it might do to your warranty. When making these kinds of modifications, this pulse plug has no effect on your warranty.
Okay.
But hydroxy is a great technology, and what I was going to say earlier is it may not be a function of volume of gases coming out of the system that makes it good or bad. It may be the nature of the gases coming off, this Brown's gas type of effect where you're sublimating tungsten.
Hmm. That's weird, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you get that kind of energetic stuff going on with a small volume of gas, it can answer why you're seeing such a big improvement, because it's going in and it's catalyzing, it's breaking down these larger hydrocarbons in the fuel, making them smaller so they burn more readily.
Mm, Really interesting. All right, let's see. What's a Gray's motor?
Gray's motor is an electromagnetic system. And just really quick, I want to get back to, you asked about this contest.
Oh, yeah.
One of his dealers, Jeff Otto, was advertising on my site for a while, and we ended up taking that down because of some bad blood and stuff that was going on with how he was approaching things. And he came back the other day and said, okay, for all you skeptics out there, I'm going to, you know, throw down the gauntlet. $5,000 says that I'm going to get a 50% improvement in my mileage, and if I don't, then you get my $5,000. If I do, then I get $5,000 from you.
Okay.
And we almost immediately had three people from the New Energy Congress take him up on that challenge. Said, sure, I'll do it. What happened was that as we talked through the conditions of this test, he wanted to do it, a highway test, no dynamometer, no chassis dynamometer. In other words, it wasn't going to be scientific. It was just going to be anecdotal. And so the three guys said, where he's saying, well, you can mess around with, you can change the data that comes out of the dynamometer, and people have done that before. But that's true. But what we wanted to do was a hybrid approach. Let's do part of the test on a dyno, part of the test on the highway. And those numbers should be fairly close. And that way we have the best of both worlds. We prove scientifically and we prove from, highway driving. And as we went back and forth and all this, it finally just came down to the guys who had accepted the challenge basically walked away and said, by the time we do this test, this guy is going to be arguing with us and say, oh, you did this, you did that, and we've seen it before. We don't want to play this game.
Right, okay.
So basically, it's up in the air right now. If somebody else wants to play with him, they can. We still have the challenge there on the website if somebody wants to take him up on that. But the three guys that initially accepted the challenge have walked away for that reason.
Okay. All right. Gray's Motor, you're going to tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, Gray's Motor is from a class that I call electromagnetic over Unity. Where
similar to Bearden or something like that?
Similar to Bearden, except Bearden's system, the MEG, is a solid-state system. These are motors that are running and in the process somehow are harnessing energy in the environment somehow. And the Gray Motor was had a lot of money involved in it, a lot of investors involved, and several prototypes. People were getting wowed with the technology. And what ended up happening was his own worst enemy type of thing. He ended up getting killed by his wife, his mistress, who put a hammer through his head. That kind of ended that. And he didn't tell anyone how he was doing what he was doing. He would tell one person, part of the puzzle, and he'd tell another person another part, but no one person knew how to do everything.
Very interesting.
And so, time, stories of Men in Black were going around because he has a hammer through his head. Well,
turned out he just pissed off his mistress.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, that reminds me of something, though, because, there are some people that have gotten rhetorical hammers through the head, but it wasn't from their mistress, like Stanley Meyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could tell his story quickly. I have a couple things that I want to talk about before we get to the end of the program, and we've got another 15 minutes or so, maybe 17 minutes. But I'd certainly like you to tell the audience about Stanley Meyer, because I'm sure there are people that listen to the program that are not familiar with the story. And then I'd like to talk about water in general a little bit after that. So maybe a little bit about Stanley Meyer first.
Yeah, before we go to Stanley Meyer, I just want to wrap it up on the electromagnetic system. I do believe that it's possible to, and this really stems from Nikola Tesla. He was playing with this stuff.
Yeah, 100 years ago.
Yeah. And so I think that we will see electromagnetic over Unity systems emerge. It could be next month, could be 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But we will see electromagnetic over Unity systems that are efficient, that are effective in harnessing environmental energy, this free energy, you know, inexhaustible. You can govern it up and down depending on the power need. Solid state's better than that, but electromagnetic motors that are over unity is definitely something I think will bear fruit eventually. Mm-hmm. We have yet to see one and validate one that's for real. It's a really hard one to chase. You know, people get really flaky when you try and get close to something when they claim they've got it. But that's a very elusive chase. And and the story I just told you is a good example of one.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Myers.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right about that. So anyway.
Yeah, he supposedly was running vehicles on water alone with no other energy input. The one we were just talking about, you'll see like water for gas. In fact, we advertise that on our site. They're not actually running the car on water alone. They're using water to electrolyze it, and they're using that hydroxy gas to catalyze a more efficient burn of the gas.
So similar to the whole Brown's gas trick.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit misleading how they advertise, you know, water for gas. Well, it's not really. But Stanley Myers allegedly was doing water alone to run a vehicle, and from a guy who has done a lot of research on Stanley Myers, he thinks that Stanley Myers didn't actually have it.
Really?
That some of that was probably coming from battery storage, and so that some of the trips that were being made in demonstrations were not unequivocally, you know, water alone powering this thing for X miles.
Hmm.
There's some pedestal that's gone on with Stanley Myers. I think there's some good technology there, and it's worth looking at, but I think that he's been put on a pedestal more than what he deserves.
Okay.
But at one point, yeah, he was in a restaurant, and he yelled out, "I've been poisoned," and he died on the floor.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to go, you might as well make a little drama out of it, I guess.
Yeah, let everyone know that it wasn't just a heart attack.
Right. All right, we have some time, and I'd like you to be able to expand on this one a little bit if you could. There's a guy's name is Rustam Roy, Dr. Rustam Roy, who's a material scientist at Penn State, and he recently published a paper with John Kanzius, the guy from Florida, right, that was working with RF to try to cure cancer, and then they realized that salt water was giving off a particular gas or set of gases or whatever that was burning very hot after you ran the RF through the solution. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's a pretty interesting one, and I don't know a whole lot about it. I'm actually supposed to interview Rustam Roy, and I wondered if you have communicated with him and what you think about that work, and maybe you might consider interviewing him too. I'd love to hear you talk with him because you know so much about this stuff.
Yeah, I actually have a front row seat on that one. If you Google Kanzius, KANZIUS, our page is the first one that comes up, and he doesn't have a website, and he basically lets me play filter for him. So when people want to contact him, they call me or email me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting daily emails, usually 2-3 a day, and phone calls from people trying to get a hold of him. They want to do clinical trials.
Right,
they want to.
Right. Oh, for the cancer side of it.
Yeah, the cancer side. Mm-hmm. Their mother's dying of cancer, and they're wanting to.
Right,
you know,
right. I'm sure. I mean, after that whole 60 Minutes thing, it had to just go ballistic after that.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of interest after that. But, you know, there have been little stories that have garnered just as much interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, smaller stories. He's been in Popular Science, I think. A number of big publications have covered him. There's a sex factor there. When I say sex, I'm talking metaphorically. It's a sexy technology, burning salt water. I mean, the oceans are full of salt water. We got plenty of that stuff. And you put some radio waves on it, and voila, you've got this flame coming off the top of the water. Well, let's think practically, though. I mean, there's some chlorine gas involved. You look at the color of the flame, and that's going to be problematic. And then you have to ask yourself the question, well, how much energy do you have to put in to the radio frequencies to get that into the gaseous form to burn it?
Right.
And one of the things that's kind of fun is when I first did coverage of John Kanzius a year ago, And we were emailing back and forth. And I do get emails from him quite often. In fact, you know, the day that he was on 60 Minutes, we were chatting back and forth, and he told me that that one was coming up, kind of gave me a heads up on it. But about a year ago, when we first were covering him, he sent me an email one day. You know, when he was first interviewed, he said that he was about 78% efficient of the amount of energy that he was putting into the radio frequency versus the amount of energy coming out in the form of gas that was burning to turn a Stirling engine.
Right.
And it
Stirling
kind of,
engine, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, it's spelled differently in my name.
I know, but I got a kick out of it. I was actually going to mention it at some time during the program, but at any rate.
Yeah. So you had that technology, and he sent this email to me saying, well, we've done it. We're actually getting more energy out than what we put in, and you're not going to hear any more from me about this. And so it's kind of like, you know, we're going to hush-hush this one, because I think this politically he knew that that was something that was going to cause him some trouble. So I don't know what's ever come of that. He tends to stick with the cancer end of the application.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't seem to have a lot of interest in the electrical or the power end of things where he's producing gas.
Right. Well, I wasn't paying too much attention until this guy Rustam Roy got involved, and I'm familiar with his work in the past, and he's a damn respectable physicist, and the fact that he got published with this thing at least means that it's happening. I'm not sure about the energy input versus output or not, but certainly it was interesting enough for him to pursue it, and I thought that was worth looking at, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is something going on there. I'm quite skeptical myself as to whether it will become a worthwhile technology energy-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer-wise, there's some issues as well. When you start putting metals combined with antibodies into a person to target the cancer cells and then hit it with the radio frequency and the metal that's attached to the tumor starts getting hot and basically cooks the tumor away.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. The problem with that is, number one, you know, no two tumors are exactly alike, so you've got to create antibodies for the specific tumor, and that can get really expensive and time-consuming.
Hmm.
I know that from my immunological background and my graduate studies. And number two, attaching it to metals, that can be an issue because not all of those are going to attach to the tumor. You're going to have some rogue metal floating around the body, so you've got one in your liver that's going to start getting hot. You got one in your eyeball that's going to start getting hot. You know,
ow!
So, you know, those are some of the questions that you're going to want to ask him when you interview him. Some of the logistics of how you're going to pull this off without having all these terrible side effects.
All right. Okay. Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, look, we've got about 5 minutes left. So what would you like to talk about for the remainder of the show here?
We haven't talked about gravity motors.
Oh, yeah. If that's something that you think is worth talking about, please.
Yeah. I mean, gravity motors are kind of like magnet motors.
How do they work?
Absolutely, there's no way you can do that. You're taking gravity, which is a static force. The only way you can get gravity to work for you is if you lift. You get the water
to put it up
first place,
right?
And then it comes down, and you have a hydroelectric dam to gather that as on its way downhill. But there are a number of people who, through history, have allegedly come up with motors who operate on the power of gravity, static gravity. So you have this motor sitting there on your desktop that is spinning, harnessing the power of gravity. And one of the most interesting stories along those lines was at the WIREC conference in Washington, D.C. a couple months ago. It's supposed to be the biggest international conference on alternative energy ever so far. And one of the booths was a company from Syria, I believe it was, and they have a number of patents on the gravity motor design. I mean, there's a guy up in Canada who's got this gravity motor that is supposed to be working.
Hmm.
So there's a number of claims to working technologies that are contemporary. You know, most of the time people think of Bessler, who have studied this a little bit, you know, a couple of centuries ago. A guy who tried about 400 things that didn't work and found one that did. and demonstrated to a bunch of people, scientifically proved it, went to his grave without telling anyone how he did it, other than the ways that don't work. So we've got his notes of what doesn't work,
right.
But we don't know what does work.
Right. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking, you know, what an amazing tale this has been over history, you know, from the beginning of energy to where we are now, you know, between, you know, the burning of the first flame and this, and it's a struggle the whole way, you know?
Well, definitely, and one of the neat things is there are some technologies that were, that kind of raised their head for a little bit, but the timing was bad.
Hmm.
Stirling engine is one of those.
Yeah.
It came along during World War II, and we were in war mode at the time, and it just didn't get the attention that it deserved. And so it didn't take off, and so people kind of have this idea that, we don't see Stirling engines all over the place because it must not be that good of a technology, but that's not the case. In fact, one of our top 100 energy technologies is Stirling Energy Systems, and that's a utility-scale plant that's in process of being installed, one in Arizona, one in California.
Really?
Where you have this huge parabolic dish that focuses on a Stirling engine that's turning from the internal combustion properties of the Stirling engine, creating electricity right there.
What's the parabolic disc for?
It's to focus the heat on the Stirling engine.
Oh, and that's how it operates.
Yeah, so it's a thermal, solar thermal technology.
Wow, cool.
Concentrated thermal. Yeah, in fact, when President Bush announced his energy initiative, he actually stood in front of their array down at, where was Sandia National Labs, I believe. But that's a good technology. One of the things we've not talked about, too, is all the engine technologies. We've got an index page of different engines. Mm. The mighty yet tiny engine is like a tenth the size of a normal engine, puts out as much power. These air engines that can run on air, the guy down in Australia, another guy, MDI over in France.
Yeah, I've read a little bit about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going commercial with those systems where you use compressed air to, and because it's so efficient, I mean, a motor that you can hold in your hand puts out as much power as one that's driving your car.
Right, because of the pressure involved.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, remarkable.
So, you know, when we can get some good compressed air storage, and for short vehicles, or short distance vehicles, forklifts, golf carts, are the low-hanging fruit for that technology.
Right. You know, I had a friend of mine sent me a copy of a letter that one of his close friends had written to a congressman or some relatively high-position person in the U.S. government. And it was a long letter about, the situation that we're in with regard to energy. And he commented that and questioned, you know, why isn't the search for, you know, a new or multiple new energy sources that are all the things that you talk about on your website, and why isn't it like, you know, like the focus and the effort that was involved in the Moon project, you know, or the Manhattan project. In other words, this should be a huge endeavor that should be on everybody's mind. And the question was sort of like, why isn't it?
And I think the answer to that question is it's starting to be. You watch the 11th hour, and that's basically what they call for, is that kind of impetus to bring new clean energy sources to the front. To have an Apollo project type of effort. He makes the point during World War II, in 3 years, by turning the automobile industry into a war-making machine, we won the war in Germany or in Europe and in Japan in a short period of time. And if once you galvanize Americans and get them working on something, you have a formidable force, at work. And what's happening is we're lacking in leadership. We've got one of the most pathetic leaderships that this country's ever had, both in the Congress and in the White House.
Yeah, I won't argue with you there.
And they're so backwards when it comes to energy. I mean, they're promoting ethanol from food, basically. I mean, that's about as backwards and asinine as you can imagine. And look at the problems we're starting to face with the food prices and the spiral. And we've got a negative feedback loop that could kill us because of their asinine policies. So, you know, we've got a long ways to go on the leadership department. And what needs to happen is, from the top down and bottom up, there needs to be a revolution of people who are just saying, we've had enough, we've got to do something about this. The answers are there. They've been there for 100 years. Some of these technologies we're talking about are not brand new. They've been around and been proven, and they got set on the shelf, and they need to be brought back up and dusted off and you know, optimized and put into the marketplace. There's no reason we should be running our cars on petrol.
All right. Well, that's a wonderful way to finish up, and I thank you, Sterling, for a wonderful talk and a great sharing of information with my listeners. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. I appreciate it, and we'll stay in touch, and I'm interested in sharing some other things with you as well off the air. So we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Sterling.
You bet.
All right, everybody. Sterling Allen on the web, pureenergysystems.com. And very interesting stuff and information that's being shared at that website, and I appreciate the time that Sterling had to share with us tonight. Let's finish things off here. One more from Blue Rodeo, and it's called Sky. So we'll hear that in just a minute, but thanks to everyone for listening to the program tonight. I hope you come back next week. We'll have Richard Allen Miller live with me here in the studio, and we'll have a little fun at the Blue Fugue beforehand probably, so join us if you like. And that'll be a great, fun show, and I hope you all can listen into it. So, anyway, I hope you enjoyed the program tonight. Sterling Allen, wonderful stuff, and thanks to Bill Murphy as well with GATA, GATA.org, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, who was on the program during the first hour, and really important work that Bill's doing as well. So, anyway, thanks to all you. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great one in between now and then. Once again, this is a song called Sky, Blue Rodeo, KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and you've been listening to Radio Orbit.
Looks like someone let you down. Told you lies and you took you out into the garden and they walked you through the weeds. Sky spend my whole life waiting. It's time you made your choice. when I feel I'm caving in. I can lie there under the moonlight.